Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. It is Thursday, March 28, 2019. My name is Dr. Brad Reedy, and this is Evoke Therapy Program's webinar and podcast. So this topic tonight is a really important one. In fact, I just flew in today from Nashville, Tennessee, where for the last few days I've been going to the yearly men's retreat that I go to with the same group of men. And so it's fresh in my mind, the idea about the kind of support that we need, that the help that we need in life, that we can't do this on our own. And for me, what I've learned is it's not just going to show up. What I had to learn, the hardest thing that I had to learn in my life was that I had to take care of myself first in order to allow other people to show up for me. And what I found is when I started to take responsibility for taking care of myself first, what I found was that the people who could support me in the ways that I needed, that they stuck around. And that some of the people who weren't able or willing to support me in the ways that I needed, I no longer found myself in their company anymore. And so the first thing that we need to do is take responsibility for ourselves. And what that means is we're going to have to make some tough decisions. We're going to have to do battle with our guilt and with our shame, because those are the things that prevent us from being able to take care of ourselves, right? To ask for something, to demand something, or to set a boundary in our life. We can be talked out of it by the voices in our head that tell us that we're being too sensitive or selfish or overreacting. And so it really does take quite a bit of work to realize that I have to do it on my own. And I have to be willing to walk through some really uncomfortable, unpleasant, and maybe even bad feelings to get to the other side. So this broadcast is going to be about what we need to do and the kind of life, the kind of people that end up in our lives when we take responsibility for requiring the people in our lives to support us in the ways that we need. What surrounds you in life is a manifestation of what you think you deserve. It won't work to ask to be treated in a certain way by others. We have to require it in order to get it. And so a lot of times in our life, we look around, we expect people to do it for us. We expect in marriage that our partner will be able to take care of us at all time. We expect colleagues, friends, bosses, employees, we expect them to take care of us. And we do everything we can to try to get them to change. We try to be good enough to argue or debate or fight with them long enough to get them to change. We recruit other people to our side. We recruit evidence from self-help books and experts to show that what we're asking for is a valid request and a valid need, when really what we have to do is come to realize at a very deep part of ourselves that we're okay, that what we need is okay, and that what we want is okay. And then things shift, like I described at the outset. Things shift, and so people end up in our lives. And even when those people in our lives are family members, right? When they're our parents, our brothers and sisters, who express love to us, but when they can't show up and support us in the ways that we need, we have to set that boundary, right? Maybe it's a time not to go home for the holidays. And then we have to fight the sentinels, the guards that tell us that that's our familial obligation, that it's the right thing to do. I wrote a piece this last fall about why you shouldn't go home for Thanksgiving. And I wasn't telling people they shouldn't, but I was giving options and choices for all of us. So sometimes we have to set boundaries. And I've had that experience a lot in this work, that families, parents have told me that some of their brothers and sisters that were judging them and criticizing them for the decisions they were making as parents, that their own parents doing the same kind of thing, that it got to the point where they had to set a boundary. And then the people that truly love and respect you and have a capacity to love you, they'll show up for you. It's your crisis, right? It's your sad, difficult time. And so it's okay to ask for what you need. I have this thought about your rights. Your rights as parents, you have a right to be treated with respect. You have a right to know where your kids are, who the friends are, and who they are with at any time, right? We allow our children to talk us out of our feelings, which is a strange idea, right? Ideally supposed to have the stronger sense of self, but when we're vulnerable to peer pressure, to the influences of our own children, we get knocked off of our center. That's why wilderness therapy, I've always found to be such an effective modality, because the separation inherent in wilderness therapy, the primary method of communication, which for many weeks is letter writing, is critically important to establishing a sense of yourself. And it's only from that sense of ourselves can we begin to create intimacy and connection. But when that sense of ourself is fragile or changing or subject to a democracy of those in our lives, it's impossible by definition to have intimacy with somebody. So we start with the foundation of self. We have the right to demonstrate we care by occasionally verifying or spot checking our children's whereabouts. We may, for example, call the host parents of parties or overnight stays. But again, I give you this bill of rights, so to speak, so that when a child tells you, you can't do it, you don't trust me, you're stifling me, you have a right to your feelings, you have a right to these behaviors. And sometimes we need to be given permission. We have a right to set a curfew and enforce it with restrictions and loss of privileges. We have a right not to condone any alcohol or drug usage and to say no to attendance at activities where alcohol and drug use may occur. We have a right to make mistakes and or change our mind. That last one is really critical, right? Parents get held hostage by this idea that if you make a certain decision, have a certain rule or idea in your family, that you always have to have it. And absolutely not. You can change your opinion. That's part of being a self. I know a lot of our clients and students will say to parents in letters and on phone calls, don't listen to what the experts say. When really what they're saying is, don't be weak. They're shaming you. Don't be weak and listen to what some therapist is telling you. Listen to what I'm telling you, right? Don't listen to anybody else as your source for truth but me. It's pretty clear that they know our Achilles heel. They know our weaknesses. They know what buttons to push, what shame triggers to flip to get us to doubt ourselves. We have a right to ask questions and expect answers about all things which may affect our children. That's why I say so often with us at Evoke, you have a right to ask difficult questions, hard questions. You have a right to answers. We have a right to monitor all school-related activities, academic, behavioral, and social. We have the right to know and consult with adults who influence our children's lives, coaches, employers, teachers, youth group leaders, ministers, and counselors. A good portion of what I want to empower you to do is ask us difficult questions. Ask the schools and programs that your children go to after Evoke. Ask them tough questions on the front end. You're not a bother. I mean, if you're a bother, if your questions about the most important thing in your life, your children, if that's a bother, then it's the wrong place. And if you get made to feel wrong or bad or stupid because you have difficult, deep, and persistent questions, that's not about you. That's about them. They're taking their inadequacy and they're handing it over to you so that you feel inadequacy or too much or too little of something. We have a right to have family rules and consistently enforce them with appropriate consequences. We have a right to know what is happening within our own home, to set house rules and to know the identity of guests who come into our home. We have the right to assign our children chores and other family responsibilities appropriate to their ages. We have the right to promote time together as a family, which may include meals, outings, study time, and other planned activities. We have a right to be authoritative when logical explanation and reason have not succeeded. The reason why I think these maxims, these Bill of Rights are important is because I talk so much with parents. It's really the majority of my energy is spent trying to expand parental capacity, right? Your capacity to hold your children. But again, that doesn't have to come at the expense of you, of your authentic self, of what you need. I'm not telling you to do any of these things. I'm telling you, you have a right to them. You have a right to your feelings. You have a right to the rules. You have a right with things that are going on in your house. If you're supporting a child financially who's over the age of 18, you have certain rights. You are allowed to ask questions. And I'm speaking, of course, I'm giving you psychological permission. And this isn't necessarily the case, but healthy people are going to support that boundary. You're saying, in essence, with these things, like, this is what I feel good about. If we're going to have this arrangement, right? If we're going to have this contract with each other, this deal, then this is what I need to feel comfortable on my side. And then you pick and choose from this list what fits for you. And if somebody argues with you about what you're feeling and what you need, it becomes so obviously ridiculous. Right? If you need something in order to take proper care of yourself, that's okay. And I would support you 10 out of 10 times. This idea of selfless parenting, right? There's this idea, this ideal that some people think that is admirable, to be selfless, right? That's a thing that people say. Selfless, not having a self as a parent is one of the ways that we can harm our children in a pretty deep way. Having a self is really important. Being able to take care of yourself, not just in your peer, spousal, professional relationships, but in your relationship with your child, is really important as a role model. And if you don't do it or aren't willing to do it, if you think it's selfish to take care of yourself, then your children don't have to even consider the existence of an other. Right? It's your narcissistic wound from childhood that's being played out in parenting. And then your children, they don't develop empathy because you're not a self. You don't feel, you don't need anything. They don't have to develop frustration, tolerance, and delay of gratification because you hold no form. It reinforces young people's center of the universe type thinking. Like, it's okay for you to be occupied sometimes. You know, this week when I was in Tennessee doing my own work, I didn't have a choice in the timing of it because it happens by a vote from the entire group. And so I missed the day of one of my children's birthdays, which I felt really sad about. I would have loved for it to be my workshop to be on a different day. And I felt guilt and texted him and did my best to plan a celebration when I would be home. And I don't like it. I wouldn't choose it. But it's important. It's important that he understand that it's okay for me to be a priority sometimes, so that he can learn that sometimes he needs to be a priority in his life with others. It doesn't model, selfless parenting doesn't model self-love and self-care. There's something called the invariant prescription that a model of family therapy used with all of their clients who came in with children that were struggling. And what it essentially was, that after a session or two, they would invite the parents to take a vacation. Something they could afford. It could just be across town. It might even be a bigger trip. And they were supposed to leave their children in the care of somebody that they trusted. And they were supposed to keep a secret, except for to the person that was in charge, to keep a secret from their children about where they were going. It was private between the parents. And it was just a little intervention to shift this idea, to create boundaries around the parents, right? To establish the what they call the parental subsystem. And really, it was a model for the children that mom and dad are going to take care of themselves. They're going to make sure their children are taken care of, but they're going to take care of themselves. Selfless parenting often prevents differentiation by not allowing your child the opportunity to challenge you. In other words, if you're a saint, it's not possible, but theoretically, if you see yourself as a saint, if that's something you need to be, if everything you do is for your children, which again, some people think is something to aspire to, but it's actually harmful. Then when they get upset, angry, sad, frustrated, disappointed, something must be really wrong with them, because who would be mad or upset about a saint? Who could possibly be angry at somebody who does everything for them? Everything is couched in, I only want your best interest. It's nearly a psychotic idea to believe that one is fully and totally motivated by somebody else, by taking care of somebody else. So again, we have to take that back. We have to take back responsibility for our lives, and our children will benefit. If there's one thing that one fundamental idea, one fundamental thing that your children need, it's for you to have the most well-developed self that you possibly can. And it's a lifelong journey, but the more well-developed, the better. Out of that grows your capacity to love them, to hold them. But it starts with self. Selfless parenting is not honest. It's impossible. There are hidden strings attached. Some of the parents that I work with talk about feeling a fear of abandonment from their children. Children can't abandon parents. Parents can abandon children, but that's not really what it is. You don't abandon your parents. But that language speaks to this idea that we're asking our children to do something for us that our parents were supposed to do. Selfishness of connection and love, right? I don't use the word selfish in my life to describe people or behavior. It just doesn't come up for me, because I think in terms of things that are therapeutic, and that's kind of a moral judgment on somebody. And I talk about that everything that I want our clients to do in the field, every one of your children, I want it because I think it's going to enhance their life, even love and connection with other people. When a child says, "What's in it for me?" I said, "That's a very fair question." Because I don't want to ask you to do anything that's where it's not something in it for you. Even giving comes out of that idea. Self needs are likely met in unhealthy and covert ways when we don't take care of them directly. That's really important. We will end up stealing from the people in our lives if we're not able to take care of ourselves in a healthy, assertive, and authentic way, an honest way. If you don't take care of yourself overtly, then you're likely to meet your needs in unhealthy and covert ways, such as depression and anxiety. If you're depressed, people are going to take care of you. You end up getting medication, doctor visits, attention, time, and energy from other people. And so in your attempt to be selfless, you have in fact engineered a way for yourself to be taken care of by other people. Your needs will be met one way or the other. They will leak, they will scream, and they will awaken the mist like Mr. Hyde if you do not learn how to attend to them. The idea of addition by subtraction is that sometimes when we ask people to not be in our lives for a time, in an instance, or maybe even longer, that our life becomes richer. It's okay to say to your family members when you're going through difficult times and they're offering unsolicited advice and judgment, it's okay to say, "I want you here, but I can't have you here if this is the way that it's going to look. And I don't really care. Doesn't matter to me what you think your obligation and your role is in my life, that you need to tell me what the truth is, what I should be doing. That might be your way of seeing the world, but that's not what I need. And I don't have to justify it. In order for us to surround ourselves with people who can love and support us the way that we need, we have to first require it of them. This applies to family, friends, and professionals. It's scary and will bring up feelings of guilt. But in order to create a safe context for ourselves, we will have to fight the old messages that tell us that we have to be loyal or obligated to someone, even when there's a well-established pattern of mistreatment. I've said this before, that if my children said to me in some way that being around you is toxic, being around you is not healthy for me, I can't be happy around you, I would support them 10 times out of 10 in cutting me out of their life as they grow older. 10 times out of 10. If they said it younger, then we would go to therapy and work on that, if I was still responsible to take care of them. But if they said it as adults, I would support them 10 times out of 10. And the irony is that when somebody can see you that way and support you that way, why would you ever want to leave? So if any of you have adult children who are threatening or who have cut you out of their lives, it's a fair discussion to have with them. Places that you can go, structure, practices, rituals, places that you can go to get support. AA, Al-Anon, codependency meetings, they're free. Virtually in every area you can find some meetings. And try, we are encouraged to try 6 meetings before making a decision. Therapy. I personally am preferential toward therapy. I told you I just got back from a 3-day men's retreat, which I do every year. And this was the best year ever out of the last 6 or 7 for me. I don't know something for me that's better than sitting in a room with somebody, telling my truth, which is my feelings, my experiences, my story, taking the risk that they're going to judge me, try to fix me, that they're going to respond with anxiety, which tells me that something's wrong with me, taking that risk. And of course, in therapy and in the group that I go to every year, having the response that's very different from my own family of origin, where people just seek to understand me, not judge me, not tell me what I'm feeling is wrong or analyzing it to hide behind therapeutic language to tell me it's wrong. Books can help, self-help books, the reading lists that we have, following along on the parent portal with your child, their assignments, things recommended by your therapist, all those things can be helpful. Vacations, literal vacations, can be ways to support yourself. I'm wearing a baseball jersey and a baseball hat tonight, and it wasn't by accident. It was kind of my expression. I did some inner child work this week. And at first I thought, well, that's not very professional, but I thought, but it's the first day of baseball season, and it's my first love, and it's where my uncle took me when I was a little kid. And he played the role of my father in many ways when I was a little kid. And it's my safe place to walk into Anaheim Stadium. And so this hat and this shirt are my way of saying that's where I love to go. And so to go to a baseball game for me is a vacation, a special place. To stay an extra night on a trip and do that. For me and my wife to go, for her to come with me, spend a little bit of extra time as a part of it. You know, I love my children more than I knew I could love anybody. And we do family vacations all the time. But as you know, those don't feed me very much. The older the children get, the more it feeds me. But with the younger children, a lot of people have the experience that they need a vacation from their vacation, because parenting children doesn't give back in the short run. And so I've got to do things for myself on the side. Sometimes vacations can be metaphorical in the sense that you're taking a vacation from therapy, even from the conflict, from the letter writing, from the old debates, the old arguments. Sometimes you give back to the child the same amount of energy that they're giving to you, right? If they're writing very little, then maybe you just write one or two sentences. That's okay. It's okay to match with an equal amount of effort and energy. And there's a danger in doing more work than them sometimes. Sometimes pulling back, giving them some space can be really helpful. Talking to parents on the parent reference list, your mentors. You know, we started the mentors years ago when a parent told me that she kept the relationship with the parent references that she called for several weeks into the program. And it was at her suggestion that we have mentors, that there be somebody that you connect to, that you can talk through, especially in the early stages, who might help you. The men that I go to, the professionals that I go to this yearly meeting, we decided this time we have to have a formal ritual. So we're going to connect every quarter and do a check-in. We connect here and there, but we know we need it throughout the year. Here are some maxims, some truisms that I think challenge some of the myths or the beliefs that we tell ourselves in our head. Trust is a gift earned on your terms. You get to decide when trust is given. There's no magic equation. There's no objective bar that has to be reached. You get to trust when you're ready to trust. You don't have to apologize or justify it. And if there's some work around trust, that's where a therapist comes in. I have had parents who have had trauma in other areas in their life or from their child where trust was a terrifying thing for them. So there was work to be done with that, right? But I honored it. I didn't talk them out of it. I spent time trying to understand where it made perfect sense. You have the right to be sad, to be heard, to ask your therapist or your child's therapist tough questions. Forgiveness doesn't come on the terms of the person who's the offender, the person who's done the hurting. Forgiveness comes on the terms and the timeline of the one who's been hurt. You have a right to cut off conversations with unsupportive family and friends regarding the placement and treatment of your child. That goes for those of you who don't have children in treatment. You have a right. You can listen to them if you want, but you also have a right to say, I'm done with this. You have a right to think over your answer. It's okay to say to your children, I have to think about it, or I don't know, instead of lying about it. I had a father, I think I shared this a couple of weeks ago, who, when his son called him during one of our therapy calls, his son asked him if he had any information about the football scores. And he lied and said, I don't know. So after the son hung up, and then the father told me that he lied, that he knew the football scores, but he just didn't want to talk about it. I told him to share that with his son in a letter. And his son wrote back and said, I totally understand why you would lie, because when you've set a boundary with me in the past, I pushed and I pushed and I pushed, but I want you to know that I'm learning to accept the truth when it comes in the form of a boundary. And you can just say from now on, you don't have to lie. You can just say, I don't want to talk about it. You don't have to apologize for boundaries, consequences, reactions to your feelings. You don't have to justify them. In fact, try to do that less and less and less. And state it more simply as, this is what I feel comfortable and good about. You are relevant. You are important. You are valid. Your gut is good enough. Your best is good enough. You are fallible and you are still good enough. A couple of thoughts that I wrote down here. Harriet Lerner, the author of The Dance of Anger, The Dance of Fear, The Dance of Intimacy, several books, somebody that I respect, she described the energy of a system to return to the status quo as, quote, change back, unquote. This is the dynamic that one could expect after establishing a healthy new boundary in relationships. It's valuable to know that even when our cherished loved ones, will often resist change, even healthy change. Rare is the occasion when others celebrate our new boundaries. Whether they are children, parents, friends, or work associates, still, this awareness can prepare us. The awareness that the change back message is going to come can prepare us for the ensuing pushback we get from our children and from others when we set a new boundary. It's part of the deal. Come to know your weaknesses, your buttons, your switches, your triggers, and prepare for them. One of the things that we do in our psychodrama, our work at intensives, is we have discussions and we inform the people playing roles in our lives about what are the things that are effective at pushing our guilt and our shame buttons. And then we ask people to say those to us so that we can practice that, what it feels like. How to resist responding in the old ways that we've responded. At a graduation session with one family, I noticed how each member of the family took a blaming posture toward the other. Each was looking at the other, pointing out a fault and asking that person to change. My final suggestion to the family was this: assume everybody else in the family is not going to change. Assume the others are going to continue to be their old idiot selves. From there, you will have the focus on where it needs to be, squarely on yourself. Initially, the mother was angry with me, accusing me of being overly negative. I explained, "I'm not being literal. I know all of you have made progress. But if you're expecting it to be easy, it's not going to work. You'll end up fighting about who is doing what and how much. If you let go of the others changing, you will all contribute a lot of positivity to the progress." So when you ask questions about relapse with your child, really the relapse that to be concerned about is your relapse. When you ask about ideas, opinions about them changing or not, really work on changing you. And that will have ripple effects in your children, in your lives. It's no guarantee. It's no perfect cause and effect. But it's the only thing that you really have any kind of control over. To move forward in healthy parenting, or really in any relationship, we have to learn to feel the guilt and do the right thing for ourselves anyway. We have to be willing to feel guilt to do the right thing, or we'll develop resentments and the negative behaviors that come along with that. So what are the take-home messages tonight? You're going to have to do battle with guilt and shame. Therapy can help. It really can. But it's not going to remove all of the guilt and shame. It can just give you enough wherewithal, right? Enough of an experience in a new kind of context, a new voice in your head. But you're going to have to push through guilt and shame to get healthier, to do better in your life for yourself and for those that you love. You have rights. Work with sponsors and therapists to see if it is based on fear and control, right? Explore it with somebody who doesn't have a dog in the fight, like the child or the partner does. In order to get the support you need and deserve, you will have to require it. You cannot expect that others will give it to you just because you asked for it or stated it firmly. The end result of all of this is that you'll have greater peace and serenity and a sense of empowerment and freedom. And this is about developing a self, right? And when you develop a self, what happens is that people around you start to treat you like a self. But you need at least one person to help. You don't have to do it on your own. A therapist, a mentor, a sponsor, somebody. Don't try to do it on your own. And make sure you find a therapist who's on board with the project instead of fixing you and telling you what's wrong with you. The lack of doing this work, this kind of work, will result in passive neediness and put your child at risk for taking care of you or giving up completely on you and losing their sense of self, their authentic and real self. See, if we don't take care of ourselves, if we ask our children to take care of ourselves, to take care of us, excuse me, they may be all too willing to do it. But the cost is the authentic self, the real self. And it lasts a lifetime. So, and nobody's going to do it perfect, and we're all going to struggle. And I can't wait till my two older children have already been to intensives to do work on me, about me. And neither one of them were struggling. They just wanted to do work about me. And I can't wait till my two younger children go to the intensives. So, all right. Send in any questions or comments. And I'm going to go over the upcoming announcements and slides. And then I'll get to your questions. So, like we always say, we would like all parents to go to 6 support group meetings. Any combination of Al-Anon, Codependence Anonymous, Families Anonymous, Alateen is for teenagers, Adult Children of Alcoholics. You can go to adultchildren.org to learn more about those. You can also go to Refuge Recovery. Just go to refugerecovery.org to attend a support group there that's not doesn't have as much of a higher power component. It's more based on Buddhist mindfulness. NAMI.org can be a great source for classes, instruction in your area that's affordable or free. Follow all of these broadcasts on the podcast app on your iPhone or on the Android on an Android device. Download the SoundCloud app. And for both, you just search Evoke Therapy Programs when you get there. On a computer, you can go directly to soundcloud.com and search Evoke Therapy Programs. On Twitter and Instagram, follow us with the handle @EvokeTherapy. And Instagram, you can also follow the Evoke Summit Lodge using the handle @EvokeSummitLodge. On Facebook, you can find us by searching Evoke Therapy Programs. You can find the Alumni Foundation on Facebook by searching Evoke Family Foundation, and also our blog. Each week has new content from our therapists and our staff. My book, the Amazon Library, is getting replenished, but while it is, you can still buy a book on Amazon by going underneath the paperback tab and clicking on the new options and buy it directly from Evoke Therapy Programs. Upcoming intensives. We have them listed here for the rest of the year. If you want to do deep work, and I can, it's easy for me to sell this product because I just got back today, literally a few hours from doing my yearly work. I can't think of something more potent or powerful that you can do for yourself and for your children than to attend one of these personal intensives. Finding You is for any adult individual. You don't have to be a parent at Evoke. About half of the people that come to these aren't parents at Evoke or have never been parents with a child at Evoke. There are also custom intensives for couples or families. You can go to our website or email intensives@evoketherapy.com. Upcoming parent support groups on Philadelphia, Monday, April 8th, I'm going to have a midday Q&A and then an evening presentation. So contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com for more information or to RSVP to any of these. I'll be in New York on Monday, May 13th, and in Toronto on Wednesday, May 22nd. We ask all current parents, if at all possible, to come to one of the multi-family, multi-parent workshops with our staff, two-day workshops. The next one will be at our Cascades, our Oregon location, April 13th through 14th. Again, contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com for more information. Pursuits trips are for families or young adults. Think therapy light, sober fun, reconnecting, rekindling the old therapy skills while having an adventure anywhere in the world. Custom trips can be created for you. All right, I'm happy to take any questions. First question from a parent. How many times can my son bring up the past? He has acknowledged with a smile that at times he exaggerates. I've apologized, though there's not much to apologize for. I've explained that I live in the present and go forward. What do I say if my son says he is so different than me or his father or siblings? I have told him that we are a family and we want everyone to be individuals. It's a great question. Great question. You're allowed to set a boundary with that anytime you want. Okay? So there's no right answer about how many times. And that's part of where you're getting tripped up is what's the right answer. The right answer is what you feel. Having said that, the best way, and it sounds like you've already done this, the best way to help him move through whatever feelings he has is be as detached from him having them as possible. In other words, have no agenda. He can be angry for the rest of his life as he wants. It's okay. And you know, what I try to practice, the mantra that I try to live by is to say to my children or to others, I'm sorry. Sounds like I did the wrong thing. Thanks for telling me. I get it. But he probably senses, I'm guessing, I could be wrong. He might sense some of your energy about wanting him to get over it. And so it tends to stay stuck and fixate. And I want to be very, very clear. You're allowed to say to anybody at any time, without the need to be right or justified, this is what I can and can't listen to. You're allowed to do that. And I or nobody else has a right to talk you out of that. Another parent says, what do I say to a 16-year-old 15 months out of a residential treatment center? The therapy does not work and as everything. What do I say? Let me just try to read that again. What do I say to a 16-year-old 15 months out of a residential program? That therapy does not work as everything is the same. Of course it does. He is better skilled and skill set than we do. What do you say to a kid who graduated that when a kid says that you stole 15 months from my life and ruined my social standing at my independent day school? Again, it's the same kind of answer. You're allowed to set a boundary and not be punished. And just admit that maybe you were wrong. You don't know. You took your best guess and it could be wrong. And you're sorry. Right? I think I shared this with you guys a couple of times in the last month and a half. My son was asked, my adult son, now 26 years old, was asked if he held a grudge or resentment at me for being sent away when he was 13 and 14. And he said no and was kind of surprised by the question. And after he left the meeting, because he was only there for half of the meeting with this group of parents in New York, I said to them, that was a very interesting question. I liked it. And I want to tell you, I love my son. I love my children more than I thought that I could ever love. But it wouldn't have mattered to me. I have no attachment to him being angry at me or not. If he would have been, I would have said, okay, you have a right to it. If I was you, I probably would be mad too. And feel the same kind of feeling. And so it tends to move people through it when they're genuinely, authentically allowed to feel it. But when they're told, even in subtle, unconscious ways, that their feelings are inappropriate and unfounded, right? That they're misdirected. When those are the conscious or unconscious messages that get sent and received, they tend to stay stuck and to exaggerate and to go on and on about it. But if we learn to say, I'm such an idiot, that you have a lot more reasons to be mad at me than just that. Let's go over those if you want to, right? When that's the energy that comes from you, they tend to move through it. There would be no reason to keep bringing it up if it didn't attach itself to me, right? That's why they do it. So, and to be clear, again, you get to set a boundary with that stuff whenever you want. I'm not telling you not to feel what you feel. I'm saying you develop a kind of capacity and a sensibility where it just goes right through you. But you're also allowed, all of us, me too, even though I have this general sensibility, I'm allowed to say to people, I'm done listening to it. And I'm not going to debate or argue that. And here's the boundary. You have a right to that also. Just as well. All right, it looks like that's all the questions for this evening. Thank you for joining us. I hope this was a helpful point of contact. I'm going to do a new broadcast I've never done just because I'm fresh off of doing some of my own inner child work and how that relates to parenting, how that affects us today. I did a big piece of work this week, and so did several of the men that I was with. I wanted to bring those concepts, that idea to you guys in our next broadcast, which will be next Wednesday, April 3rd at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. So I'll talk to you next Wednesday, April 3rd at 7 p.m. Mountain Time about our inner child work. What is an inner child? It's not as woo-woo as you think. I can break it down to be very scientific and reasonable and rational, and I'll talk about that and how it impacts, how it's the foundation that it impacts all of our relationships, and maybe most profoundly, our very children, our real and literal children. So thanks for coming tonight. I hope these point of contacts are helpful. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday. Take care. Bye-bye.